Missy, who doesn't like fish. Missy, who's outgoing and friendly. Missy, who January knows. Damn it. When I reach the Lucky Falls office, my vet tech tells me a little brown terrier is on her way.
Blossom has a terrible bee allergy, and she was stung this morning on her walk.
That's all I need to extricate dates and women from my mind. Minutes later, the cutie pie arrives with a swollen face and a worried person. I administer the necessary shot for the little sweetie, reassuring the owner that her darling Blossom will be fine and that she won't look like an overgrown Sharpei for very long. For the next few hours, the prospect of dating and faking it is forgotten. But later, the charade weighs on me like an anchor, tugging me down. It makes me start to question all the things I thought I wanted when I moved here just a few weeks ago. Missy is funny. At least, I think so. I've done a serviceable job of paying attention to her over tea during my lunch break the next day. The willowy redhead chatters on about the time she bumped into a wall in the yarn shop because she was checking out a brown and tan chihuahua walking by outside the store.
I was like this.
She demonstrates by smacking the air in front of her as hard as one can possibly smack air. She shrugs a shoulder, saying with humor,
"That'll teach the store to put a wall in the way when I'm trying to stare shamelessly at all the dogs walking by."
"Walls should be removed when cute pooches stroll the streets," I say, a little deadpan, and she laughs too. She doesn't take herself too seriously, facile with a dry sense of humor, my favorite kind. But it's January's favorite kind too. January's quite good at dishing out the dry, the droll, and the deadpan. She's good at dishing out vegetables too, and that's not something I thought I would enjoy, but I definitely like them coming from her. She's also great at serving up honesty and open-heartedness. Our conversations have been the kind that can spill endlessly into the night.
"Some are definitely hard to resist,"
Missy says, and I blink, reorienting myself to the moment. Hard to resist? Like my neighbor? Wait, no, that's wrong. We're talking about dogs that are hard to resist staring at, not neighbors who are hard to resist talking to, thinking about and wanting to kiss. Wanting to kiss all over. Wanting to taste, to savor, to please. Taking a drink of my tea, I zero in on the woman in front of me. The woman who is taking the time out of her day to go on a date with me. The woman who popped over from Duck Falls to have a meal. I want to be respectful of her and keep my mind and heart open to all the possibilities, since the possibilities won't happen with the woman commandeering my thoughts. "Tell me what you like about Duck Falls, Missy," I say to the redhead. She talks about all the little things, like the glitter on the sidewalks and the ducks in their pink wading ponds, then the sheer number of women-owned businesses.
"We like to joke that somehow Athena is responsible for the town. No one can really figure out why there are so many more women here than men. It doesn't actually make any sense."
"Magic," I suggest playfully. "Also, I'm absolutely not complaining that there are more women here than men." Missy flashes me a bright smile.
"I bet that doesn't bother you in the least."
This is the moment when a date should tip over into flirting, into banter, into talk about being good in bed or banging in the kitchen, like January and I teased each other about at the IKEA cafe. Yet I can't seem to sit on that end of the seesaw with Missy. I don't want to tilt it in the direction of innuendo, because I don't actually want to have that banter with anybody other than my neighbor, and that is getting to be a problem. I'm 3 dates into my quest, and already my stupid heart craves exactly what it can't have.
"I just love Duck Falls,"
Missy continues, wrapping her hands around her iced vanilla latte.
"I love all of the ducks, the people, and the train tracks, and I love the women-owned businesses, like the yarn shop and the bookstore and the hair salon and the carpenter."
I sit up straighter, keying in on that, like a dog cocking his head when his person opens a bag of kibble. "Carpenter?" I ask, doing my best to seem casually interested. Not deeply, intensely, ridiculously interested.
"You know, your next-door neighbor, January, She's the best. She actually started our board game and beverage nights.
I try to suppress a grin that threatens to take over my whole face. Now this date is getting interesting. This date is going where I want. Perhaps Missy is my dating insider, about to serve up details on the woman next door. Details I want to gobble up. What's board game and beverages? I ask, as if I'm only mildly intrigued by that tidbit, when I am fascinated with every morsel.
It's a really cool club for the female business owners of the town. We all try to get together once a month, and we play board games and have beverages. The whole group of us. Me as the lingerie shop owner, and then Alva, who owns the hair salon, and Nina with the boba tea shop. And the best part is, we make up crazy rules on the fly. Like, a couple of weeks ago, we were all playing Monopoly, and January had this funny idea,
Missy says, and I'm on the edge of my seat, elbows on the table, eyes wide open, ears pricked. I'm listening to every word, because I want to soak in everything there is to know about my next-door neighbor.
Alva was being a total stickler, so we thought it would be so much more fun if we randomly banded together and bought groups of properties and charged her higher rent when she landed on them,
Missy says, grinning the whole time. And that was January's idea. She nods vigorously.
She's just like that. It's so her personality. We were drinking and toasting and mostly poking fun at Alva. And then January started tossing all the money at us, saying she was going to open a club and she was making it rain, making it rain,
Missy recounts. And I'm so ridiculously delighted with this story that I cannot wait to see January later and ask her all about her board game night. That is all I want, plain and simple. Since Mum invited us for supper that evening, Ethan and I pop home after school and work, then head to their place in Lucky Falls before I have a chance to give January grief about making it rain Monopoly money. Over chicken enchiladas, my dad peppers me with questions. And what about Kate Stevenson's dog? How's Freddy doing with his heart condition? I update my dad on the golden retriever he treated for 8 years. He gives me some suggestions. They are exactly what I told the client. But I simply nod and say, yes, that's great advice. I'll tell her that. It makes him happy to stay involved like this. It keeps his brain fresh. I can only imagine that as his world is narrowing, becoming blurrier by the day, it must mean so much to him to still be able to use his mind. But the thing is, I don't actually need my father's advice on how to handle a dog's heart condition. Instead, I need his wisdom on the condition of mine. After dinner, I pull him aside, setting a hand on his arm so that I can guide him through the living room toward the back deck. We step outside. There's something else I want to talk to you about, Dad. He gives me a crisp nod, sliding into that fatherly zone that he's so good at occupying. What is it, Liam? I tell him a little bit about my dilemma, a little bit about how I've been feeling, a little bit about what I want. He takes a deep breath, the kind that says, wow, you've got quite a conundrum there. But then the soft smile that draws up his lips, the thoughtful glint in his eyes, tells me that this impromptu bonding session is a riddle he wants to unravel. I think the key is you should be honest. That's what matters most. Be upfront with the woman you saw today, and be upfront with the other one too, even if it's as complicated as you say it is, he says. We talk a little more, then I clap him on the shoulder. You've always steered me in the right direction, Dad. He shakes his head. No. You've always known what direction to go. All you needed was someone to remind you of what you're already feeling here. He taps my sternum. When Ethan and I leave, I let his advice sink in, slide under my skin, invade my brain. I let it roll around in my cells. Be upfront. Be honest. I have been, but not all the way. Not with every woman. And I need to be. Because I know where I want to be, even though taking a chance isn't part of my plan or the great dating escapade, and it won't likely align with my goals, my dreams, or my 5-year plan.
but I can't seem to want anything else. And there's a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things. Whether this is a big town or a small town, there's only one way to do the next thing. Once I'm home, I don't text Missy. Texting a woman who unexpectedly fed you nuggets of information about another woman is for cowards. Calling is the only way to do it. I ring her up.
Hi, Liam. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Missy. I had a great time at lunch, I say, pacing in my kitchen, readying myself to say something I didn't plan to say because I didn't expect to feel it. Or rather, I didn't want to.
I did too. You're a hoot, she says.
I swallow, then finish. And one of the reasons I had such a great time is because you shared so many terrific details about January.
Oh.
That one syllable is laced with confusion, and I'm about to unlace it. It seems I've developed a fondness for my next-door neighbor, I say, opting for a little old-fashioned flair, just because Missy seems like someone who enjoys more of the story. And it seems to work, because Missy is squealing.
Yes! You'd be adorable together. I'm so excited. She deserves someone like you. I'm rooting for you too.
I smile at her reaction. A very Missy, very enthusiastic reaction. Thanks. I don't have any idea what will happen, if anything. And nothing has.
Well, change that now, Doc,
she says in an over-the-top, bawdy voice.
Make it rain! Make it rain! Make it rain!
Laughing, I say, I'll see what I can do. She clears her throat, going more serious.
Are you going to ask her out on a date?
I give her the only answer I can. I tell Ethan to get ready for bed, and I go next door, knocking on January's door. When she answers, her chestnut hair piled in a messy bun, a pink t-shirt stained with plaster, I raise my hands in surrender. I'm willing to eat radishes if you tell me all about your board game club. A smile races across her lips as Wednesday cackles from the couch, pokes her head up and says,
You should hear how crazy competitive they got Sunday night when they played Monopoly again. They're so loud, I can't even sleep when she has board game club. But Monopoly is nothing compared to how rowdy they are with Candyland.
January swings open the door, invites me in, and tells me more about the board game nights. I eat up every detail. But I can't linger, since Ethan has school tomorrow and a bedtime. I hook my thumb in the direction of my house. I should go, but thanks for entertaining me with your tawdry tales, I say, girding myself to say more, to ask for what I want.
Thanks for demanding them.
She looks at the clock on her kitchen wall.
Tomorrow is furniture assembly night. Are you ready?
I rub my palms together. Ready to sit on my ass and watch you do all the work. She nudges me with her elbow.
I will put you to work as my assistant.
That sounds like more fun than it should be. It sounds, too, like exactly what I want. Fine, if you insist, I say, as we walk to the door, then onto her porch. The night air has cooled, but a summer breeze drifts by in the dark, as the starlit sky and the porch light illuminate her face.
I do insist.
And I am looking forward to it. I arranged for Goodwill to pick up my bachelor pad furniture tomorrow morning.
Perfect.
My feet feel like they're stuck here, and I don't want to leave. I won't leave until I say what I came to say. This is the chance. It's time to take it. For all that it's unexpected, that it might derail my plans. It's time, because she's the one I want to invite to a wine bar, a breakfast cafe, a tea shop. I go for it. Do you want to have dinner afterward? Her eyes go wide and vulnerable. There's a twitch in her lips too, as if they're curving up of their own accord.
Do you mean out or at your house?
There's a question in her question. I take another chance, answering from the heart, full of my feelings for her, and full of my desire too. Why don't we have dinner at my house? After all, Ethan is spending a few hours at Carrie's.
January licks her lips, nods, and says yes. I have no idea what I've just gotten myself into, but I can't wait.
Chapter 17. January. Wednesday, the day, not my kid, is a light one for me. I only have one job scheduled, fixing some hinges in a winery this morning, so I'm planning on spending the rest of the day on billing. But who am I kidding? I'll probably spend my time daydreaming of tonight with Liam while I try to wade through invoices. In the morning, I brew a pot of coffee, pour a cup, then send my kid on her way to school. Learn lots of things, make good choices, don't hack any of your teacher's accounts, I say, walking her to the door. She raises a brow. Not even my algebra teacher's, because word on the street is he made a cool mill on some tech funds, so I bet he'd be worth a hack. I allow the corner of my lips to turn up. That one is fine. Go for it. She pumps a fist dramatically. Yes! But cover your tracks, okay? With an eye roll, she says, duh, obviously. I give her a smooch on the forehead. So proud of you. I'll see you. What time did you want me home? A flush crawls up my chest, knowing why I asked her to go to Audrey's for dinner. 8 would be fantastic, I say, my voice a little dry. How about 8:30? Her tone is hopeful, like she's the one asking for something I don't want to give. I suppress a wicked grin. Sure, if you must. Thanks, Spawner. See ya, Spawn. I wave as she heads down the steps and walks to school about a mile away. Along the route, she'll meet up with Audrey and they'll amble together, planning their next quirky food test for YouTube. I make my own way down the steps, then stop at my vegetable gardens out front, checking on the greens, taking a drink of my coffee, and enjoying the late August sun warming my shoulders and warming my soul. And I know why. Because my mind is on tonight. My body is reaching for this evening. My whole being reaches for possibilities, for chances. I said yes, knowing the danger, knowing the risk of capsizing the life I've carved out in this town. He's my neighbor. I have to see him every day. I have a kid who's happy, a business that's growing, friends who support me. Do I truly want to risk all of that for a roll in the hay? For a dinner? For a night with him? He wants more. He wants a future. He wants a missus. I want none of that. I want my life, the one I'm finally having. Why, then, did I say yes? As I survey the green beans in my garden, I flash back to last night, to how I felt when he came over. When he asked me to have dinner, a giddy sensation whirls through me out of nowhere. I set a hand on my belly, smiling. That's why I said yes. Because of that feeling, a little dizzy, a little drunk. But it's a good dizzy, a good drunk. And he's a good man. I can manage whatever this is, whatever tonight becomes. We are mature, responsible adults. Surely we won't be the first neighbors in the history of the world to act on an attraction, then tuck it away and return to the way we were. Yes, that's how we will do it. We will do it the smart way. The adult way. The, can I still borrow a cup of sugar in a year's time way? Almost as if he can read my thoughts, I hear his voice.
Fancy meeting you here.
I turn to find the most handsome, charmingly sarcastic man I've ever met, wandering across his yard toward mine, holding a cup of tea. I stand, unable to wipe the flirty smile from my face. He's so delectable in his blue scrubs as I catalog his features. His freshly shaven jaw, his deep brown eyes, his toned arms. And most of all, his smile. Confident, happy, and genuine. My stomach flips. Such a shock to see me outside in my front yard, isn't it? I ask.
Are you sure you're not stalking me?
I arch a brow. I was going to say the same thing to you. He laughs.
Guilty as charged, then.
Might as well slap the handcuffs on me, too. His eyes light up like they're awash with dirty thoughts. Maybe we're both being totally honest. Maybe we're both saying, damn the risks, because this desire is powerful.
I'm amenable to that,
he murmurs. Those soulful brown irises darken and a current zaps through me. I want to rope my arms around him and beg him to kiss me soft, then hard. So hard, it'd be like he was fucking me with his mouth. Shit, I need to get it together. I'm working from home most of the day. I offer simply to say something besides, take me to bed. In a heartbeat, his expression shifts from playful to practical.
The furniture delivery is coming by around 11. I thought I would be able to be home for it, but I have to...
He makes a snipping gesture with his hands. Ah, you are relieving a dog of his most prized possessions.
I am.
Do you want me to let them in?
Would you?
He sounds as if I just said I'd deliver him chocolate from Paris every day for the rest of his life. I'd be happy to. That is, if you're comfortable giving me a key. He taps his chin.
That's a good question. Are you planning on rifling through all my drawers?
Just the interesting ones, like your sock drawer.
Oh, by all means, go right ahead then. If you want to find the really fascinating stuff, don't forget the utensil drawer. It's to the right of the dishwasher.
Thanks for the tip. I've been meaning to look at your spoons. Spoons tell you so much about a man.
Don't forget to check out the knives then, too. That should tell you everything you need to know.
I crack up, loving that the man gives such clever innuendo. And perhaps your nightstand drawer? He growls, a low, sexy rumble.
Perhaps yours.
I tug at the neck of my t-shirt. You'd find very interesting things. Another groan emanates from his throat. So damn sexy.
You're making it very hard to go to work.
Am I? I ask, unable to resist this dive well past innuendo and straight into naughty land.
Yes, but Sparky the Wonder Pup has been fasting all morning, so I can't leave him hanging.
Pun intended.
Pun always intended.
He scratches his jaw, exhaling.
I'll leave a key under the mat. Thank you for helping me. You're an angel.
You think I'm an angel? I ask, jutting out my hip the slightest bit.
Are you telling me you're a devil instead, January?
His question comes out a little husky. A little smoky. I step closer, getting into his space. I want to feel the vibrations between us, the energy that seems to be intensifying by the second. When he asked me to dinner last night, it's as if that unleashed all of the unacknowledged heat between us, and now we're reveling in it. Do I seem like one? He inches closer too.
I'd like to know the devil in you.
You want to know if I'm good or bad? His lips part. His eyes darken. His Adam's apple bobs. This sexy, kind, outgoing, clever man looks absolutely undone. A gust of air crosses his lips, and it is clear what's happening tonight.
I do want to know. Absolutely.
He says in a whisper that makes me feel as undone as he looks. But he has to go to work, and so I vow to surprise him. I handle the delivery, but I don't stop there. I don't simply let the guys in and leave. I need something to keep myself busy today. Rather than wait and assemble the furniture later, I do it all now. I put everything together, focusing the whole time on the task, blasting my new playlist as I put together the couch, the table, and the chair. 4 hours later, everything is assembled. I'm sweating and my muscles are tired, but it's a good sweat and it's a good tired. Nothing a shower won't cure. I pick up all my tools, straighten up, and then grab a sheet of paper and leave him a note. Am I an angel? Let's find out. I go home. I shower. I put on a pink sundress. He likes me in pink. But more than that, I like me in pink. I like, too, how all my ink is on display. How he can see the birds flying up my arm. Well, not all of my ink. I smile privately as I wait for him to return from work. keeping myself busy making a salad I hope he'll like, or at least tolerate. Around 6, there's a knock on my door. I open it, drawing a sharp, fevered breath when I take in a freshly showered Liam in jeans and a gray t-shirt that's nice and snug across his pecs, showing off his strong arms. He stares shamelessly at me, then unleashes an appreciative, "Wow," as he holds up 2 bottles of wine.
"You're an angel for the furniture. Thank you. Thank you so incredibly much. But I'd like to know both sides of you. First, would you like wine?"
It comes out gravelly, like the question isn't about wine. It's about desire. It's about tonight. "I would," I point to the white, "but I want it later."
"And what do you want now?"
I feel breathless, jittery all over, but ready to, knowing the danger, knowing the risk. Knowing, too, that if I'm going to adult this thing with him, then the adulting needs to start before we get naked. I meet his gaze. "This doesn't change anything, does it?"
"Not if we don't let it,"
he says, his eyes never straying from mine. "Then let's not let it change things." He raises the bottle.
"I'll drink to that."
He tips his head toward his house.
"Come over, January. Come over now."
He's never sounded this commanding, this determined. His voice makes me hot, turns me on. I grab the salad, step onto the porch, and shut the door behind me. He sets a hand on my back, making me shiver, making me want. The second we're inside his house, he takes the salad bowl, sets it on the entryway table, and puts down the bottles of wine. When he shuts the door, he pushes me up against it.
Chapter 18. Liam. Screw food. Fuck wine. Forget everything in the world right now but this. There are no questions. There is no uncertainty. We are about to kiss. January is an inevitability. A gorgeous, fiery fait accompli. But even if I'm dead certain that our lips are about to connect, that our bodies are going to crash together, I'll still savor every second of this. Whether it's a done deal or not, whether this kiss comes as a surprise or it doesn't, I intend to relish it. Because a first kiss is always a surprise. It's a delicious, decadent discovery. Will she like it slow, fast, and deep? Long, hard, and wet? Will it be an exploration, a revelation, a declaration? Will it sizzle? Will it make my head go hazy? The second the door shuts, I spin her around and back her into the door. Her eyes flare with heat. Mine roam up and down her body. "Have I told you how much I appreciate what you did in my house today?"
"No, not entirely. Do you want to show me?"
She asks it all flirty, full of intention. And her forthrightness is a massive turn-on. "I do. I very much want to show you all of my appreciation," I say, as my right hand finds her waist and curls around it. I savor the contact. That first electric moment of touching her sends a wave of heat crashing over me. Her blue eyes shimmer, her lips part, her breath catches. She's in this as much as I am. And that ratchets up my lust another 100 degrees. My pulse roars just from being near her like this, and yet I want to get so much closer. I move against her, barely a breath between us. "Confession. I thought about this the day I met you." She swallows, her expression full of dirty wonder.
"You did?"
"You didn't?" I ask, laughing. She laughs too. And I love this about us. I love that we get each other. I love that our laughter gels and that we can be like this, firing innuendos, teasing each other, wanting each other.
"Then do it,"
she whispers. "Gladly, neighbor," I say, like the word tastes delicious on my tongue. I bring my face down to hers, wanting to kiss her, but wanting to draw it out too, to make her shiver, to make her shudder. I brushed my lips along the column of her neck. Actually, from the second I met you, I wanted to kiss you. She shudders against me.
I felt it too. Wanted it too.
I brush my lips against her ear, nipping her delicious earlobe. She tastes fantastic, and she smells even better, all clean and pretty, like some kind of flowery lotion that absolutely drives me crazy. It's a sweet, feminine scent that spells woman. A woman who knows her mind, who knows her wants. The scent wraps around me. It intoxicates me. I lick her ear, my tongue coasting across the shell of it. Thought about you all day.
Including while you were snipping dogs?
I chuckle. Let us not discuss snipping while my dick is hard. On that note, she pushes her pelvis against the outline of my erection, and I groan savagely. My head goes hazy as the need to touch her everywhere intensifies, thrumming through my veins. My lips travel across her jaw, sucking and kissing as I go. And when I think I can't take it anymore, the tease, the build-up, she's gasping and murmuring. Her sounds send adrenaline coursing through my body. My skin grows hotter, and every cell in my body craves the woman in my arms. I am so damn lucky to have her here in my house, wanting all the same things I do. And I want her to know with how I touch her, how I taste her, how I plan to bring her oceans of pleasure, that she deserves it all. She deserves everything. I capture her lips with mine, and we kiss like everything makes sense in the world. Like this kiss is the answer to all the questions. Like everything we've ever needed to know can be found in the way our lips fuse together. We explore each other's lips. The feel and the taste of her floods my senses, fills my mind, spreads across my entire body. As the kiss deepens, the need to touch her more, here, there, everywhere, escalates. I slide my hands up her arms, cupping her cheeks, holding her beautiful face in my hands. Everything feels right about this moment. We are the picture of wanting, needing, and having. My tongue slides into her waiting mouth, and we moan as we connect. We murmur as we explore. My hands slide into her lush hair, and hers climb up my chest, rubbing against my pecs in a way that shows she likes what she feels. So much so it seems like she melts into the kiss. And soon, this becomes a long, slow moment, and we're both gasping for air as our hands and bodies seek each other. We press and touch and grind. Heat radiates between us as we go for another round of kissing, deep and fevered this time, teeth and tongues and fingers in hair, then grappling against clothes. I feel wild, and I want to share all that wildness with her, to let her go wild too, since I'm pretty sure that's exactly how she'll be in bed. I break the kiss. That's only the beginning of how much I appreciate you, I say, all rough and gravelly, because I can't speak any other way right now, since she's fried all my brain cells. She's frazzled everything inside me, and I want her so much. Her eyes are wicked, rimmed with lust.
But then, how else do you appreciate me?
This woman. I'm going to show her. I turn her around, admiring the view of her back, the curve of her ass, the shape of those strong legs. Hands against the door. She lets out a sexy purr, sliding her palms up the wood. Let me show you, I say, moving her hands up higher so those inked arms stretch above her body, her sparrows soaring to the ceiling. She glances back at me.
So this is how we're doing it?
Yes, this is how we're going to do it, because I have a thing for your neck. I move her hair to the side, and I kiss the back of her neck, sliding my lips across her delicious skin. The moan she unleashes is like the gorgeous chorus to a song, and I want to hear it again and again, so I kiss her more and more. No, it's worship. She moves like water, almost swaying, bending, curving against me, as my lips travel along her flesh to her shoulder, then to her collarbone and back up. This time I don't simply kiss her, I nibble. Her breath catches, a long, needy pant, Another bite, another moan that spurs me on. As I push the strap of her dress down her arm, licking and nipping across her skin, a delicious scent goes to my head with every single stroke of my lips. I kiss down her back to the top of her dress, tucking it down a little farther, flicking my tongue along her spine. The whole time she wriggles against me, arching, moaning, but her dress is in the way. I solve that problem by reaching for the hem, lifting it up, then pulling it over her head and tossing it onto the couch that she built earlier today. I let out a long, appreciative moan as I regard the gorgeous beauty in front of me. She wears only a cotton bra and knickers. A long, lovely, luxurious back is on display. I run a finger along her spine, and she shivers as I touch her. "Your back is incredible," I say.
"Then maybe put your mouth on it."
"You love to give directions," I say.
"I just know what I want, and I want you touching me. I want you kissing me."
"Good thing I want my mouth all over you," I say, as I savor every single second of tasting her. Moaning, she writhes against me and makes her desire known as I kiss down to the waistband of her knickers, tugging at them, dusting my lips over the top of the gorgeous globes of her ass until she spins around, all wild and needy. She gestures at me, pulling at my t-shirt.
"Off. I want your clothes off."
"What do you know? I want my clothes off too." And then I cup her chin, bring her mouth next to mine, and whisper against her. "I fucking love that you know your mind."
"I do. And I want you to have me, and touch me, and kiss me, and eat me, and fuck me."
That sounds like a perfect dinner plan. I lift her up and let her koala me, wrapping her legs around my waist, her arms around my neck. As I walk to my bedroom, her body twined around mine, I tease her, saying, "But what about dinner?" Her grin is dirty and flirty.
"Eat me first."
"You first, dinner later. Sounds like the perfect recipe." Because there's really no argument ever in the history of the universe against doing exactly what the woman wants in bed, especially when it's exactly what I want too. In the bedroom, I lower her to the mattress and strip off her bra. Then I delight in those fantastic breasts, savoring each one, lavishing attention on her nipples. I kiss my way down her body as she moves under me, panting and groaning. When I reach the top of the white scrap of fabric, she is the most beautiful sight ever as she twists on my bed, lifting her hips, asking for more touch, for more connection.
"Off. Take them off."
"Why, yes, that's exactly what I planned to do." I slide the last shred of clothing off her. Heat bursts inside me, like a fire roaring through my veins as I gaze at the stunning sight in front of me. January, totally aroused, completely naked, glisteningly wet. And there's one more treat, too. The answer to a question I had when I first noticed the art on her arms. Does she have any under her clothes, out of sight? The answer is yes. A delicate tulip graces her hip bone, pink and green and so very lovely. I breathe out hard, tracing the tiny flower with my index finger. "This is you," I say, reverently. She nods, a knowing smile crossing her lips.
"Yes, it's me."
This is the girly girl in your tomboy. It's the sexy, sweet, feminine side under all that fix-it, do-it-yourself hotness.
"Yes,"
she says, that one syllable full of delight, like she loves that I figured this out, discovered this about her. I bring my mouth to her hip, press a soft kiss to the tulip, and lick the delicate lines of it. A murmur falls from her lips, and when I raise my face, I ask another question. "When did you get it?"
"Almost 2 years ago."
It comes out as a whisper, at a low volume, underscoring the secret she's sharing.
"No one's seen it."
A fresh rush of lust whips through me, but it's more than desire. It's stronger, richer already, Since she's sharing herself with me in a way she hasn't with anyone else in ages, she is a gift, and she doesn't give herself easily. She deserves to be cherished. So I kiss the tulip once more, like I am cherishing it. I kiss it, murmuring against it, "Beautiful." Then I rise up, meet her gaze, and say, "Thank you for showing me your art." There's so much more to that statement than the words themselves, and I think she knows it.
"Thank you for seeing it,"
she whispers. And for several heady seconds, it feels like we're teetering on the edge of a dangerous cliff, one that leads to jagged rocks and thorny terrain. But before we fall, she catches us with her body. She moves up onto her elbows and looks at me, desire in her eyes.
"Why don't you at least take off your shirt?"
I do as she asks, peeling it off, tossing it onto the floor. And here we are, back firmly on the physical plane. And that's fine by me. "Don't ask me to take anything else off, because I need to have my mouth between your legs right the hell now." She moans and answers with the most wonderful word.
"Yes."
I set my hands on her knees and spread her open, my pulse spiking. When my lips kiss her hot, wet center, my eyes roll back in my head at the first luscious taste of her, at the sweetness of her desire, and the sounds she makes. Moans, groans, sighs, murmurs, long and plaintive. My name, too, how it turns into a cry and an arch as she bows her back. She's wildly desperate already. I kiss her, flicking my tongue against the delicious rise of her clit, moaning at the decadence of her. My dick throbs harder in my jeans, and lust spins through my veins because she tastes spectacular. She sounds even better, panting and babbling the most gorgeous noises ever. Like a woman who wants everything I'm giving her, who's saying my name, who's saying more, who's pulling me closer. She tastes like a woman who wants everything, who wants me, who wants to come very, very soon. She spreads her legs wider, then threads her hands through my hair, yanking me closer as she chants,
"Don't stop! I'm close! I'm almost there!"
Seconds later, she bucks against my face and lets out a long, keening moan. Her hands slide up into her own hair, and she's touching herself. It's the most gorgeous thing in the world as she comes hard on my lips, shouting, crying, and losing her mind, it seems. And I am ridiculously happy that I could do that for her, as well as insanely aroused. As she comes down, I break the contact, slide my jeans off, find a condom quickly, and sheath myself. And then I ask a most important question. "What would it take to get you there a second time?" She stares at me, licks her lips.
"Just your cock."
"Well, I was hoping you would say that. But what position is best for you?" Sitting up, she grabs my dick, tugging me to her. I don't need to give the position a second thought, because she's issued her declaration. I slide into the woman who occupies my thoughts, my body lighting up from the hot, tight grip of her, from the noises she makes, from the feel of her as I fill her. She knows exactly what she wants. Sliding her knees up to her chest, she moves them higher, near her breasts, offering me herself, for pleasure, for both of us, shamelessly. And I fucking love it.
"Can you give it to me hard, Liam? Make me feel you everywhere,"
she whispers. My brain short circuits. Lust fries all the cells in my body. I thrust deeper, push her right knee higher. "Like that, just like that." Her features twist in some kind of ecstatic agony.
"Yes, just like that."
It's a breathy, needy answer tinged with relief, like she's been craving this kind of intimacy, this kind of sex. Pressing a hand against her knee, I go deeper so she can feel me both in her and against her, where she needs me.
"I happen to be quite good at following directions,"
I whisper against her cheek, then laugh lightly.
"Well, when it comes to sex and recipes."
She laughs too, her back arching, her arms looping around me.
"Want the recipe for another orgasm?"
I believe that's what you're giving me.
The smile on her face is warm, vulnerable, then insanely dirty when it shifts into a grin of hungry, carnal bliss.
Here it is. More. More.
She pants, her hands grappling at my back, tugging. They skate down to my arse, squeezing. This woman. She wants to feel. She wants to feel me everywhere. She wants a hard, powerful fucking. No teasing, no games. Just to be taken. And I want her to have everything she longs for. I fuck her hard. Deep. Relentlessly. Savoring. Reveling in the sight of her losing her mind with lust. With desire. As she arches against me, she begs for more. Like she needs sex with me more than anything in the world. Like she needs another orgasm more than oxygen. And I don't want to deprive her. I give her everything she wants, taking her over the edge again. It is gorgeous and glorious to wring more than one climax from this woman. Under me, she looks spent and sated. And I'm almost there too. There's one thing I want, but I don't have to ask for it, because she pushes up to her elbows, drags soft fingers down my pecs, then reads my thoughts perfectly.
Want me to write you? Finish you off like that?
I groan so loud I bet they can hear me in the town square. A bolt of fresh lust slams into me. You are indeed an angel. It's official. In seconds, we switch positions, me flat on my back. She straddles me, rises over my cock, then lowers herself back down. The grin on her face is filthy as she takes me in again, slides her palms up my chest, and presses them against me. Then gives me the best view in the entire universe. Her tits bouncing up and down as she rises up, slams down, then does it over and over, annihilating my senses until white-hot magic pulls me under as I come hard inside my next-door neighbor, who I should not be fucking. Not at all. But right now, I don't fucking care. Chapter 19. Liam. That cut dinner short, and I regret nothing. The possibility of sex is why I picked an easy recipe, why I came home an hour early and made it, so it'd be ready. Because when you invite a woman over for dinner, you shouldn't ignore her belly, simply because you plan to enjoy her body for an appetizer. Plus, I do like the possibility of dessert, her, and I'm hoping we get to have that course before Ethan returns in an hour and a half. 90 minutes. I can do this. I serve the pasta primavera, and we sit at the kitchen table.
Speaking of recipes, did you follow one for this?
January digs her fork into the dish, waggles a piece of bowtie pasta on the tines, then pops it into her mouth, closing her luscious lips around the meal I made for her. I smile, waggling my eyebrows. I'm quite proud of myself for finding this recipe for your vegetarian heart and body. And one that doesn't have too many vegetables I despise in it. I take a bite of the pasta too. She peers at the food.
So it's green veggies on your verboten list, but you're okay with gray veggies?
She roots around on her plate, pointing to some of the mushrooms I picked up from the farmer's market over the weekend. What can I say? I was hopeful. Hopeful that I'd make dinner for her at some point, so I pre-gamed at the market. Mushrooms are good in my book. She pokes an artichoke, spears it, then holds it up like she's captured it.
But artichokes, aren't they green?
Ah, that is a most excellent question, I say, taking a bite, chewing, then answering her when I'm done. I consider artichokes to be part of the so-called beige family of vegetables.
I had no idea beige was a family of vegetables.
Learn something new every day.
You are a font of knowledge.
She reaches for her glass of white wine and takes a healthy drink. When she sets down the glass, she picks up the fork again, pushes through the pasta, and lands on a slice of carrot.
And clearly orange vegetables are satisfactory, on account of not being green.
Yes, they do seem to pass my general vegetable test. She gestures to the salad she whipped up. The clever, creative salad.
Good thing I didn't put Granny Smith apples or honeydew melons in there.
Your salad is the height of brilliance. With a naughty eyebrow arch, she blows on her fingernails.
Pretty proud of that one.
As you should be, you temptress. My eyes shift to the absolutely delicious fruit salad she made. I tap my fork on the side of the bowl. See, this is my idea of a perfect salad. Peaches, pitted cherries, and raspberries. You are a genius. Just to make my point, I dip my fork in, snag a peach, and savor every juicy bite of it. She laughs.
You do like sweet things, Liam.
I arch one brow. You're just figuring this out now.
I'm simply pointing it out now.
I lean in closer to her, my face inches away from hers. I love sweet things. All sorts of sweet things. I enjoy all the sweetest tastes around. Because I can't resist how very sweet she is, I press a kiss to her cheek, sighing happily as I inhale her decadent scent. Maybe it's peaches, perhaps it's cherries. Whatever it is, her scent goes to my head. She sets down her fork, shuddering the slightest bit. She slides a thumb across my jaw, then says,
"How sweet am I?"
I bring my lips to hers, dusting a soft, barely there kiss across them, murmuring, "The sweetest. You are absolutely the sweetest, January."
"Am I?"
It comes out flirty. I answer in kind, as I dust my lips along her neck, up to her ear, nipping that earlobe once more. "You taste and smell incredible. Your hair, your skin, your lips, and your absolutely delicious pussy that I would really like to kiss and lick and suck again tonight." She hums in response, a sexy, sensual sound that makes me want to get down on my knees, slide my hands up her skirt, spread her legs, and devour her again. Fanning her hand in front of her face, she stares at me, narrowing her pretty blue eyes.
"You're trying to distract me from finishing all this delicious food you made for me. But I need it because I need my energy."
I'm all coy and playful as I say, "And what do you need your energy for?" Her lips curve in a wicked grin. Her hand grips the hem of my shirt, tugging me a little closer.
"I need it because it's almost 8, and I'm going to want a little something for the road."
I groan my appreciation for her libido, for her mouth, for her mind. "Do you have any idea how sexy it is that you know exactly what you want?" She gives a little shrug, her bare shoulder jutting up.
"I want you. It's really quite simple."
That makes my heart squeeze, maybe even glow. Warmth fans through me as I linger on her statement for a moment. This thing between us seems like it ought to be quite simple. Two adults enjoying each other's company. But it's not simple at all. It's fraught with complications. Even though we want a lot of the same things, connection, intimacy, conversation, I'm keenly aware that we don't truly want the same things. I'm a relationship guy, and even if she's been a relationship woman before, that's not where she's at right now. She's choosing to take a break. She needs one. Hell, she deserves it. I can't push her. I won't push her. That's not my style, and it's also disrespectful of her journey. I can't imagine extracting myself from a long, loveless marriage, finding my own way, starting my own business, and then being sucked into the vortex of another relationship. I wouldn't want that. I understand why she doesn't either. I move away from matters of the heart. I need to zero in on something inanimate. The furniture. Perfect. I gesture to the living room. "Thank you again for putting everything together. I know I said that when you first came over, but I was distracted by getting you naked. And now I want to properly thank you and say that was incredible, what you did."
"Oh, I think you did thank me properly," she says,
playfully lingering on the words. "I'm glad you feel it was a worthy way to show my gratitude."
"So worthy,"
she taps her chin.
But are you saying you're not distracted by getting me naked now?
I shake my head, laughing. I'm pretty much always thinking about getting you naked. But I simply wanted to say your gift was a lovely, delightful surprise.
Does it suit you? Your furniture?
I glance at the newly built couch, chair, and table in the other room. Yes. No. I don't know. I don't really care that much about furniture and whether it suits me. With a thoughtful look on her face, she asks,
What do you care about?
She takes another bite of the pasta primavera as she waits for me to answer her latest question. And this question is something I care deeply about. Because this question is part of the connection between us. The easy way we can segue between teasing, dirty talking, and then diving in deep. These talks matter to me. I care about her, about how we are together already. But I don't say that yet. Now isn't the time. The time might not ever be. Still, I answer honestly, repeating the question. What do I care about? I mull it over for a few seconds. I care about doing the best job that I can as a vet. I care about helping animals. I care about my parents, my sisters, their children. I care the most, of course, about my own son, which still kind of amazes me every day, since I never intended to have a kid. And yet it's as if I can't remember a time when I didn't care for him. She smiles, big and genuine.
Does it sometimes feel like the first 7 years of his life didn't happen? Because living as you know it started when he came into your life.
My eyes widen, and I feel completely seen, thoroughly understood. It does feel that way. And I loved my life beforehand. I thought it was great. Then he came into it, and suddenly it felt like the most important part of it had begun at last. I take a beat, noodling on those thoughts, on how right and true